This is The Topic is Trek, episode 32 for Friday, November 16th, 2018. Excelsior! Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Need more drums in that, I think. Anyway, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hola.
Hola.
From the planet Spanish.
Oh, my. Your transporter got cut off mid-transport. Are you okay?
I'm missing a foot, but I'm okay.
That's okay. You're just a bit shorter then. And...
Need any help?
And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I was just thinking as I was coming into the studio, what would Star Trek V have been like if instead of singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, they sang that other song? What was it? Moon Over Rigel 7? Because, you know, the song kind of played into the movie theme, and I'm thinking, could it have gotten better if they'd stuck with the original idea?
Now, see, I thought you were going to go in the direction of it. What if they'd been singing The Song That Never Ends? Because that movie never seemed to end.
Yeah. That's right.
I don't know.
Life is but a dream. Who wants a marshmallow?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I gave it the office. It's fine. All right. Well, by reference, the title of this episode, of course, we lost a legend in fandom this week that we're recording this show. Stan Lee passed away at the beginning of this week, and we have a couple of things in this episode where we will talk about Stan. So let's open up subspace chatter.
We will not be playing bagpipes.
No, we won't, because they would win and it just wouldn't be pretty at all. All right. Speaking of Stan, the first story, it comes to us from TrekMovie.com. Star Trek community shows solidarity with Marvel after Stan Lee passes. Today, earlier this week, legendary comic book writer, editor, and publisher Stan Lee passed away at age 95. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Lee died Monday morning at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. The man who made the optimistic mantra, Excelsior! His catchphrase is being mourned and remembered by genre fans around the world, including Star Trek fans and luminaries. The article then goes on to talk about Stan Lee's involvement, obviously, with Marvel, but in the context of there were times when Marvel had the comic book rights to Star Trek, and when you were doing that, Stan Lee Presents was at the top of each of those comics. So that's a connection that Stan had. The article then goes on to show a clip from Trek Nation where Stan talks about Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry. We also have Stan's appearances in a couple of Star Trek fan films, which I had forgotten about. I remember seeing them at the time, but I had forgotten. This was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw the Farragut one.
Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. And then we have a bunch of tweets from various Star Trek people sharing their memories, photos with Stan, Carl Urban. Notably, I think I'm assuming that was in connection with something to do with the Marvel Universe. And we have, of course, Patrick Stewart, who played Professor Xavier. And so it's a very nice article about Stan and his involvement with Trek. And Craig, I know that this one really kind of blindsided you in the news about Stan this week. Is there anything you want to share about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess everybody knew, obviously, at some point it was inevitable. He was 95. But yeah, it was this big speed bump in my day. I couldn't kind of get my mind off of it after a while, I guess because he's just been a big part of my life. You know, indirectly, or more directly, I guess, through comics and then all the Marvel movies and stuff that's been coming out, all these big characters that he had a hand in creating. And I think it's, you know, I don't know how much more of all these characters have made an impact in my life and countless others, you know, as well. I don't see, like, I saw a quote from somebody, I think it was on Marvel, one of their tribute videos that said, I don't think we could ever have a world without Stan Lee ever, because he's made such an impact on everybody. And obviously me too, because like I said, I kept coming around to it all afternoon after I read the news, and I just couldn't get my mind off of it. But I did get a chance to just briefly meet him. Me and my son had a picture with him, and I got to get a comic signed by him. And right after he did, I was able to shake his hand and tell him, thanks. You know, I've been a big fan all my life, and that's my big opportunity to say something to him. So,
Craig, do you need to talk to a counselor?
Well, Troy, she's in 10-4.
I was thinking the employee assistance program. You know, go through some grief counseling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the big things for Stan was that it was character driven, and I think that, as Trek fans, we appreciate the fact that something is character driven. And certainly he was a pioneer in that field. He and the people he was working with at Marvel Comics with the characters they were creating. And that had ripples down the line to things that we get today, both on television and in comics and mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. motion pictures. So definitely someone who will be missed. But let's try to move on to something a little more pleasant and something intriguing that may be coming down the line.
Yes. And it looks like Michelle Yeoh may lead a Star Trek spinoff on the CBS All Access. CBS All Access rapidly growing library of Star Trek shows might include one revolving around a familiar star. Deadline claims Star Trek's Discovery, Michelle Yeoh, is talking about reprising her role as Captain Giorgio in a standalone All Access series. The project would reportedly be an extension of Giorgio's story from Discovery Season 2. CBS has declined to comment on the apparent leak, of course. So if it comes to fruition, the spinoff would be in line with CBS's strategy between the Picard series and the Short Treks, which I'm enjoying, by the way, Below Decks and plans for other shows. Below Decks is the animated film series that's coming out, and plans for other shows. The network clearly wants a continuous stream of a new Star Trek material to draw people to its streaming service. As Deadline warns, though, Yeoh's availability might complicate matters between the potential for a Crazy Rich Asians sequel.
Potential? I think that's pretty much a sure bet.
Well, if she has a spinoff series, she may be a Crazy Rich Asian herself. And a production deal with SK Global Entertainment, the star might have many opportunities to take on a regular series and may have trouble taking a regular series in the future.
So it's interesting because when you talk about the spinoff with Giorgio, you could go actually in two directions with that, right? You could go either with Mirror Universe Giorgio and Section 31, or you could back up and have this universe's Captain Giorgio stories.
Right? Or
so you could go, right? Oh, yes.
Option third
of five, of one, of seven, yes.
Seven of nine.
There we go.
Yeah. No, the other option would be, what if you had a series that showed the regular universe and her mirror one and how they were maybe juxtaposed against each other?
Or life before Burnham. You know, what was she doing? How did she get where she is? You know, do a prequel series.
Right. So
she sounds like a fascinating character to explore.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying, is have it be actually about Captain Giorgio, you know, earlier on in her career. I know a lot of the talk has been about her character being her Section 31 character. But since these are all rumors at this point, while that seems to make some sense, I don't necessarily think that it's the only route you could take doing a series with her that was Star Trek related. And speaking of things that are Star Trek related, because we always do on this show, because the topic is Trek.
Ding.
Michelle Yeoh wants to be in the Picard series. No, I'm just kidding.
No. Maybe she does.
We're just going to keep throwing characters and actors at that thing till it dies.
Tribble number 3 wants to be on the Picard series.
But, you know, speaking of the Picard series.
This is from Cinema Blend. Star Trek fans got quite a lovely surprise a few months ago, when it was revealed that Patrick Stewart would be returning to the fold as Captain Jean-Luc Picard for a new Trek series. And it turns out that the legendary actor is so invested in the show that he actually spent some time working with the writers. Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Michael Chabon. How do you say that last name?
I think it's Chabon.
Chabon. Isn't that that character from the Cobb? It's Al Cabong.
No,
his guitar.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. No.
Okay. A lifelong Star Trek fan who is working on the show recently revealed that he got the chance to work directly with Stewart as part of the writer's room. And it sounds like it was a wonderful experience, in bold letters, which is actually a link to somewhere. Quote, "He was in the room for 2 weeks. It was fantastic. That was the sort of preliminary writer's room that we had been going before it expanded to a full room that is now with a bunch of writers in there. I'm up in Berkeley and they're down in LA, but that time with Patrick is a resource, and as a very willing and literate resource." You use resource twice. You're not much of a writer, are you?
Hey, he's not much of a speaker. He's a writer, not a speaker.
I think it's going to make the show. It's going to take it to another level. Just have him participating in the way he participated. Amazing. So honestly, as Star Trek, the Next Generation fan, and a Trekkie in general, I'm quoting the article here, I'm actually getting chills thinking about the new show with Jean-Luc Picard that also has Patrick Stewart so invested in that idea that he's been active behind the scenes and the series is beginning to take shape. While it's usually not standard for actors to be part of the writer's room, even at an early stage, such as the one Michael Chabon, I'm going to work on that, talked about with Deadline, most diehard Trek fans would understand why Stewart was allowed into the depths of the creative process of the new show, even though it's unusual for actors to be invited or allowed into the writer's room. As ideas for a show are brewing, Patrick Stewart and others of his stature are a different matter. No kidding. And based on that article that we had a couple shows ago where we showed them sitting, you know, they're all staring intently at some screen, you can tell he's involved with this. He's not just an actor. Come on. I mean,
right. Well, I figured
he's
that
got
he,
chops.
Well, plus the fact that he has lived with that character and probably has his own thoughts about where he would be 20 years later.
Yeah. It's
working in a writer's room.
Yeah, that's right.
They're going
staring
to have
at
to,
staring at something.
Now that all these actors have aged properly, they don't need makeup to refilm All Good Things.
Yeah.
When you reach a certain status, you do get to be having a say in as the show is being developed. But yeah, your run-of-the-mill actor is not going, "Hey, you know, guys, this is what I think you should do with this show." No, they don't.
Great.
Want
He's giving
of
us
that.
Notes. Fire him.
Yep, pretty much. All right. Well, speaking of notes and firings, is kind of was this an oops moment that just happened over on Twitter? Star Trek Discovery did a set video reveal a big season 2 spoiler.
Inquiring minds want to know.
And I watched this video earlier today before this article came out. A fun video from the set of Star Trek Discovery may have accidentally revealed a major plot point from the show's second season. Earlier today, Mary Chifo tweeted out a video of herself in full costume and makeup as High Chancellor Laurel singing and dancing along with Demi Lovato's song Confident. Toward the end of the video, she was joined by co-star Shahzad Latif. That's where the spoiler comes in. Latif plays Vok, a Klingon who was surgically altered to appear to be human Ash Tyler in order to infiltrate Starfleet. The plan worked until the trigger phrase that was supposed to bring Vok's memories back only did half the job. He was left with memories of his life as Vok and his false life as Ash Tyler, both warring with each other for dominance, leaving him unstable and violent until he learned and accepted the truth. At the end of Star Trek Discovery's first season, Laurel ascends as the new High Chancellor, and Vok, despite still appearing human, decides to stay on Kronos with and help her get the Klingon Empire back into shape while maintaining the uneasy armistice with the Federation. There's been no sign of Vok slash Ash Tyler in any of the trailers or promotional photos for Star Trek Discovery's second season. Now we see Latif still in human form, which isn't surprising. What is surprising is that Laurel is in full Klingon regalia on what looks like to be a Starfleet vessel, and Latif is back in Ash Tyler's Starfleet uniform.
Considering maybe that's all he had to put on. Maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe it's, this fits. I'll wear this. Considering we are just over 2 months away from Discovery's second season premiere, Chifo and Latif must be shooting a scene for an episode late in the season. Does this video suggest Vok will give up his life on Kronos and resume living as human Starfleet officer Ash Tyler? Or is this a temporary situation born out of Laurel's once again forming an alliance with the crew aboard Discovery? I feel like this is a soap opera thing being...
Tune in next time.
You need that dramatic organ music.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. I was wondering where that was headed. Was that a...
You need to work on your organ.
Yeah, should just be like, you know, dramatic chipmunk.
I bet your car sounds like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I think we just lost Chuck.
Yeah. And now a word from our sponsor.
Well, when I was watching this video on Twitter, I noticed, obviously, that he came out and he was in his Starfleet uniform. I guess because that's what we saw him in season one, I wasn't making that connection. However, we also, I think we were talking about everything we know so far about Star Trek Discovery season two.
Right.
There were hints, sometimes very couched, sometimes more out in the open, that these two characters are going to kind of play some sort of diplomacy bit between the Federation and the Klingons. So I guess it was not unexpected for me to see that going on. I didn't see it as a spoiler necessarily.
Yeah, I don't see it as a spoiler either. I mean, I just watched it and I'm like, okay, it didn't give you anything with the story, so how can it be a spoiler?
Right. The spoiler is just that, you know, he's back somehow in a Starfleet uniform, apparently on a Starfleet vessel.
Hey, he didn't pull out his wallet and show you his badge or anything, so I don't think it's a spoiler.
All right, fair enough. We rule non-spoiler. Move along.
That's right.
Then we're going to move along to a game. Shall we play
second
one?
Second Shap.
What?
Huh?
You said move along, like, and then you said a game, and I said second
Shap. No. Move along home. No.
Okay. So, speaking of home, if your home is in the Kelvin timeline, Star Trek Fleet Command is a new mobile title coming to iOS and Android. And I just verified this. I'm going to read this, but it's not true. Despite the formal 29th of November release, it appears you can grab the title now, which you cannot. I'm sure it was a... I tried to get in there. I think it's a...
Right. You can pre-register for it. So I don't know whether this is some sort of developer beta that they're talking about or whether you have to sideload it. And so
I think it may have shown up in the Play Store by accident or something because it's not there now. But I have pre-registered for it. It still says registered, excuse me. Anyway, developer Scopely calls the title an MMO strategy sci-fi warfare mobile game set in the Kelvin timeline in which Chris Pine plays Captain Kirk. See, he did play Kirk again.
Yeah.
The game's reveal trailer can be watched below at the link, and you can find all these links at thetopicistrek.com.
Hey, there we go.
Wow. It's a quote.
You enter can't a surprise galaxy. Me like that.
Yeah. Quote, enter a galaxy on the brink of war as Federation, Klingon, Romulan forces vie for control of the Alpha and Beta quadrants. Discover an ancient secret that could tip the scales of the power of power forever.
Uh-huh.
Scopely further detailed. Quote, no. As commander.
The love for the Delta Quadrant? I mean, come on.
Yeah, no. Or Gamma.
Nobody goes to the Gamma Quadrant. It's like the slum of the galaxy.
As a commander of a starbase on the edge of civilized space, you will recruit iconic officers like James T. Kirk, Spock, Nero, okay, and he's dead, but okay, and build powerful ships, including the Enterprise, the Romulan Warbird, and the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Klingon Bird of Prey?
No, pray not.
Not the Bird of Prey.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to it.
I am. I, you know, this may be my next go at video game for next year. Who knows?
I mean, yeah.
So I may hold off on this for a while.
I've got a Chromebook that runs Android apps, and I'm thinking this could be a good screen to play this on. So, you know, full screen.
Yeah, I don't like playing the games on phones, especially if you've got lots of action going on. Everything is just like, look, one pixel big. What is happening there? I have no idea.
Don't encourage Clinton to play games on his phone. He'll turn it into a whole season of podcasts.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be, you know, next dog days. Me playing this game, probably.
Yeah. I still laugh about you talking about the doing the
forward roll.
Because I did the same stupid thing. By the way, listener, if you have not heard this, go back and look at the Comedy Forecast and look at the Dog Days of Podcasting. He talks about Clinton here, and I'm talking about him in the third person.
Yeah.
He talks about playing the Trek Online, and the character, as you're walking around, does these weird, you can accidentally roll forward, like do a somersault or something like that, and jump on stuff, and it's like
no one notices, no one cares,
huh? Yeah,
no one cares.
It's so unprofessional, and they're doing it, and everybody's like, whatever. Teacher's on, whatever. It's all good. It's all good in the space hood.
T. Anyway. Someone standing at the replicator. T. Earl Grey. What the hell is going on over there?
Yeah, spill your tea. Whoa.
That happens all the time. The new recruits.
And I was like, this is kind of weird. Everybody's just kind of walking and ignoring your buffoonery.
And in fact, they're promoting you because of it. So go
new recruits.
Yeah. And you got promoted.
All right. So more fun and games with video games coming up soon.
They've taken promoting diversification to a whole new level. Yeah. Oh, where's my drum roll for that one?
So we talked very, very briefly in passing, 7 of 9. Well, I found an article that was a very interesting take on 7 of 9 when you look at things.
Yes.
And yeah.
Is this mine or yours? This is mine.
That's yours. That was my throw to you.
Oh, right in the gut.
Ah.
From Screen Rant. We have this article, 20 Wildest Things 7 of 9 Did Before Voyager. Doesn't that sound like clickbait to you?
It certainly does. That's why I clicked on it.
Yeah, it worked.
It was at the bottom of some other site. Movie stars, you won't believe what they look like today.
Go through the slideshow.
The introduction of 7 of 9 to the Star Trek Voyager series came about in the fourth season. Of course, we all know that. Introduced as a member of the dangerous group known as the Borgs. Someone needs to check their spelling on this thing. They forget letters all over the place. Her initial mission was to help complete a deal made between the USS Voyager and the Borg Collective. Was she a liaison? What's your role? What do you say you do for the Borg?
What, is she up for promotion or something? What is going on here?
However, she eventually
LinkedIn suddenly?
She became freed from the group. leaving the emotionless cyborg to begin feeling again. Oh, sounds like feeling. We could have used Deanna Troi. Tell me how you're feeling.
Nothing more than...
Seven of Nine, whose collective name was Seven of Nine, Tertiary Adjunct of Unimatrix 01, received a second chance at a better life and freedom, although the former human woman could never be fully restored. The cyborg found a way to cope with her past and her new semi-human body.
How she got a second chance. You got a second chance. Good news is you're away from the Borg. Bad news is you're on a ship lost in space, and we don't know if we're going to even survive. Hey!
Hey, did Injun Lynch get a second chance? You and your white whale.
Wow. That's pretty cruel, Craig. But I like the connection. And where was I? The played by actress Jeri Rinehart appeared in 96 episodes of the series and became a fan favorite, of course. And it wasn't just for her acting. Although viewed the character as a way to add more visual appeal to the show, thanks to her very tight uniform, the role brought a unique style presence to the show overall. Although it seems likely her story began when she boarded the USS Voyager, she actually lived a fascinating life prior to joining the crew. Her life's journey took her through many traumatic experiences, affecting her life at a very young age. Only dedicated fans know the details behind her history before being a part of the crew. In this article, we will explore the aspects of her history from birth until her fateful arrival to the USS Voyager. From her broken childhood, her last moments as a human being, here are the 20 wildest things Seven of Nine did before Voyager. She partied in college like it was 1999. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
Was it Borg's Gone Wild? Is that what you're implying?
We need that Calypso music again. That's going to be us in January.
We need a band so Chuck will stop. I mean, I'm telling you right now.
I need more music clips. Where are the music clips? I'm not going to read through each one of these. We invite you to go over to the show notes and click through them over at thetopicistrek.com. See, I can get the timing right.
You guys got to work on that. If you're doing it, sure. I mean,
there's no magic to this thing.
I'm getting a bell. Hello, Amazon.com. That's it.
I'm going to read a couple of teasers and invite you to go read the rest. Number 20, inconsistent home life. Before she became Seven of Nine, fans grew to love. Her story began in the Star Trek universe as a young girl named, do you remember her name?
Well, yeah, I do because I'm looking at the article.
Annika Henson, that's right. You win, faithful listener. Born to Erin and Magnus Hansen. They were from someplace north, I assume. She began her life on the...
That accent they were.
Tendara colony. However, with both of her parents working as exobiologists, they spent little time at home with her. Ooh. Denied. Aww. The majority of her childhood was divided between relatives that cared for her instead.
Go stay with Uncle Ted. He's passed out this week.
Again?
During the episode Author, viewers were introduced to her mother's Aunt Irene Hansen and learned more about her childhood days spent with her. In addition, we discovered she also spent some time with another aunt, Helen, and even got into some mischief with her for Annika's 6th birthday. Sadly, many of her fond memories as a child did not include her parents, or at least the ones we saw on screen. Number 19, she was traumatized by her future self. Who wouldn't
I hate
be?
When that happens.
I know that's happened to me all the time.
Yeah, I know, right?
Number 18, her parents...
I had a dime.
Her parents risked her life for science. That sounds intriguing. She broke the law.
They didn't have a rabbit, and so they just kind of, you know, I need to test this perfume. So.
What can we do? We got a kid here.
She broke the law. Breaking the law. Thanks to her parents' obsession.
Looks kind of smug about it, too.
She hid from the Borg.
You can't see me. I've got my eyes closed.
Count to a bajillion, and I'll be somewhere in the universe.
But they would, so I don't know.
She was captured by the Borg and placed in stasis. You guys got a favorite in here that you like?
I'll be honest with you. The whole... I like... Not just because visually, but I liked her on the show. I liked the show better once they introduced her character because it kind of mixed things up. The first three seasons was kind of very PC, and, you know, I didn't find it super interesting, but it was initially interesting enough to watch. But when they brought her character in, I think that's when it really took off, at least for me.
When she was in just full Borg gear, she was kind of creepy, freaky looking.
Yeah.
She does a good job.
I was just happy that her last name was Hansen instead of Hanson. Otherwise, Craig would have burst into Mbop. So,
you
know. Oh! I was thinking her name sounded like Anakin Skywalker almost.
No, Annika.
I know.
She was a tennis player.
Annika Skywalker.
Arnold Schwarzenegger came walking in all of a sudden. I had no idea what was going on there.
I'm throwing curveballs today. All
right, so we are going to move on and just give a quick congrats to actor Idris Elba being named People's Sexiest Man Alive for 2018.
Hey, he only got it because I withdrew my name.
Well, that's true.
It only lasts a year, so, you know, my year was up last year. So, you know, it's nice to let somebody else take the crown.
I get Mr. Congeniality, but
you gonna wear the sash on the cruise?
I am. So clearly, this is all based on his role in Star Trek Beyond as Krall. So I, once again, congratulations to Mr. Elba, and we look forward to you as James Bond.
Because he looked so good during that transition throughout Beyond, right?
Yeah, he just was like, I think it was interesting seeing the movie. At what stages people in the audience were saying, I think that's Idris Elba.
Hey, just keep in mind that Nick Nolte was also the Sexiest Man Alive.
You know, as long as Gary Busey doesn't get the title, I think we're good. That's all I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Right. Still alive.
He might get it before I do.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's talk about some money you can spend instead on some things.
You can buy your own votes. So actually, his historic prop is going up for auction.
Auction!
What could it be? So an important piece of Star Trek memorabilia is going up for auction as part of a massive TV collection. The collection belongs to James Commissar. Oh, Commissar.
Stop.
That's Chuck's job.
Sir Commissar, a television aficionado who has been collecting props from popular shows for over 30 years. This is the first time he's ever put any of these items up for sale. So the Star Trek item includes in the auction Captain Kirk's Grecian toga from the Star Trek original 1968 episode Plato's Stepchildren. This is the costume worn by William Shatner as Kirk when he kissed Lieutenant Nyota Uhura.
It's just a bed sheet he had laying around. Anyone can claim that it was that.
Toga.
What else you got? By the way,
I like that once they revealed her name as Nyota in the Kelvin Star Trek, it seems like you see it everywhere now.
Well, that was already, they had already come up with that. That name already existed in the, I forget, somebody
book or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would often see it in fan stories and in books, and I know there are, again, people screaming at their, you know, their machines or whatever that they're listening to this on, saying it's because of the, but it was a name that existed before the Kelvin timeline. Movies.
And maybe I just danced around the fact, but I never really saw it until or at least I didn't pay attention to it too much until I saw it in the movie. I was like, okay, he's making a big deal about her name not being, you know, not knowing it. And then they threw it out there. Anyway.
I think it'd be fun to have some of those obscure morbid collectibles from Star Trek. This is the car that hit Edith Keeler.
So anyway, here you go. So in the episode.
We went along.
Yeah.
Go anywhere, did it?
Yeah. So that episode was popular because that's the first interracial kiss. And the item, the toga, is valued at an estimated, it's estimated between $60,000 and $80,000. Wow.
So if you go to our show notes for episode 32 over at the topic is Trek. com, you will find a link in the story to go to the prop store's website. The auction begins on December 1st.
You still have time.
Right.
So you have 16 days, 14 hours, 37 minutes, and 9 seconds, 8 seconds. It's got a countdown on the site.
Yeah, it does. So we just keep going until it actually shows up. But you can check that out and spend lots of money on props and then send us a picture of you wearing the toga. That would be fun.
Hey, there's your costume for the Trek cruise.
That's right.
I'm bringing one of the bed sheets.
Look, I bought this $60,000 toga.
it looks like a bed sheet. Sure, and Dave, whatever.
I thought I overpaid for the $100 bathrobe.
Yeah. What?
And for our last story.
You guys haven't been on a cruise, have you? You can buy the bathrobes. It's like being in a hotel or a spa. All right, never mind.
No, you can buy the bathrobe.
Robe, I'm okay. I'll do that.
All right. So for our last story, we kind of head back to Discovery for some more information about the DVD.
Yes. You can watch the bonus clips from Star Trek 1 Discovery Season 1 Blu-ray. Woohoo! Over at TrekMovie.com, Star Trek Discovery Season 1 will be released on Blu-ray and DVD tomorrow, as of the writing of this article, which was November 12th. So, yes,
you can already have it.
You can. It's out there. Yes, can get it. Go get it. Bye.
It's available now.
Yeah. Let's see. Where was I? In the meantime, we've rounded up a number of CBS clips and teasing for some bonus features and video clips. Here they are for your viewing enjoyment. And I was watching these just prior to the show. They are a lot of fun. They were showing the theme music with the orchestra putting it together and their explanation of, you know, how it starts out with, you know, an homage to Star Trek with the, not a flute, but he had a glockenspiel and a little. Yeah, and then it goes into the
played by somebody named Hansen.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, wait a minute. I don't see a theremin in that room.
There's other clips of Captain Giorgio and Sarek. They get into that, and the writers are involved with this. A lot of fun. These are the little DVD extras that you come to expect. Well, you can find those, as always, if you go to our site, click on Episode 32 show notes at thetopicistrek.com. Nailed it again.
I am wondering, because I've been paying for CBS All Access.
Yes.
Why can I not watch these?
Because they're on Blu-ray.
Because they're encouraging you to buy.
I get it. But I'm like, come on. Throw me a bone.
Well, I mean, this DVD doesn't have the short treks on it. So I don't know whether that's a good question. I mean, we're going to talk about the latest one in a minute, but where are those going to end up? Because there won't be long. I suppose you could put out one DVD with all of them on it.
Yeah, probably.
As a standalone.
Yeah, kind of like, sort of when they did the remastering of TNG, I ended up buying one disc that had like three episodes. It was before they started releasing it. It was like the first, it had three episodes that they had already completed and you could watch.
It's kind of like in the old days, buying all the VHS tapes with one episode on each one of them.
Will you guys be buying the DVD set?
I think I do like these bonus features and I'm sure they'll be available places otherwise, but you know, I'd like to have it. I'd also like to have a nice, not compressed version of the images, because I know that, you know, it's very well photographed and you get the full sound from the DVD or the Blu-ray. So I think I'd like to get the Blu-rays for that alone.
Well, 4K Blu-rays, yesterday's news.
Well, we can have the discussion about Blu-ray versus 4K another day. Oh, look at that. I did a whole poem right there.
Almost. Yep.
But
got to keep working on the segues.
Oh, by the way, if you want to see the stories we didn't get a chance to talk about, you can find those also in the show notes for episode 32 over at thetopicistrek.com. All right. It's time to come back from our subspace chatter segment. Are those the same buttons I pushed last time?
No, that was ST buttons number 6. We haven't used 6 in a while.
They're now the correct ones, finally.
They are, thank goodness.
That's why the show is going so well.
Yes. Smooth as sandpaper. All right, and it's time to now, let's see how the warp engine's doing. It's time to head out on our main mission. Warp engines are so silent now. It's
get out of push time. I swear I'm going to make a double speed or quadruple speed of this.
0 to 60 in 2 hours.
And that's enough.
All right. And I think we have to, just to be on the safe side, preface this with a spoiler alert.
Oh, boy. Where is it?
Ah, boy.
Where'd it go? There it is. Spoiler alert. Yeah, one is enough.
All right. Because we're going to be talking about the
Windows up?
Windows up? What? Who? When? Where? Why?
Keep your hands inside the ride at all times.
I just got here myself. Let's talk about the Short Trek episode Calypso, which just premiered on November 8th on CBS All Access. And as some people pointed out, on Space in Canada. The episode is the same type of format as Runaway, that it's I think the episode is about 18 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a character sketch type of piece rather than a full-blown episode. And this one stars Aldous Hodge as a character known as Kraft.
I like him. I first became aware of this actor in Leverage. He was the technical guy from that series. And I like that show.
Oh, all right.
He's great.
My wife Bonnie used to watch that show. Yeah. So,
he did a great job in that series, and he does a great job in this one, too. So I like him as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The plot, as written, I think, in a brief, is that after waking up on an unfamiliar sickbay, Kraft finds himself on board a deserted ship, and his only companion and hope for survival is an AI computer interface.
He woke up to an Amazon Echo.
Yes. So we won't use those words that will activate that, but you know what we're talking about. The voice of Zora is played by Annabelle Wallace. However, the holodeck dancer is not the same actress. That's Striga.
I didn't go look it up, but I thought it might have been the same. Okay.
And it was directed by, I'm going to try carefully on this name, Olatunde Osunsanmi.
Close enough.
And the story was by somebody we've already been talking about, Michael Chabon and Sean Cochran. And the teleplay was by Michael Chabon. So this is a little introduction also to Michael's work that we'll be seeing the flavor of when the Picard series shows up. I mean, obviously, they're not all going to be like this episode, but it gives you a sense of his writing style, at least. Yeah. Let's just start off with general impressions, because I've got some notes about some things, but let's start off with general impressions of the episode. What did you guys think?
Go ahead, Craig.
I thought I liked it. I thought it was kind of weird thinking the Discovery would last 1,000 years. You know, it's been sitting around 1,000 years waiting for Screw to come back. Mm-hmm. But I did like it. I thought Aldous did a good job, you know, being there by himself or just interact, you know, not necessarily interacting with anybody, but a voice. I liked how he's sitting around, and next thing you know, there's like food stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like he's been hanging out. I like the 3D effect with the movie, you know, and the bridge. But that it's those kind of things, though, that take me a little bit out of where the Star Trek stay is. Now, I know it's 1,000 years in the future, but the technology on the ship sure does outpace that we've seen in TOS.
Well, I thought of that as a not illogical progression from what we were seeing in on holograms. And we talked, I think, last time about a little disappointed that they were still using the holograms in the Runaway short track. But I saw it as, well, she's got a thousand, or she has 1,000 years to be doing something. So you now kind of, what do you do with that technology if you're just by yourself and you keep watching this movie? Let's figure out a way to make that use the holographic technology and do this thing to it.
Mm-hmm.
And she did say at one point, I thought that she had evolved. I mean, she was continually improving. So you know, the even though there was no crew around to learn from, it was a sort of self-learning, self-improving system, which in itself is interesting enough.
I have this feeling that some of the stuff that we're seeing in this episode, it's hard to tell if it's really extremely standalone or does it fit in some place down the line.
Yeah.
And one of those things would be the introduction of a very basic function on the ship that's called Zora at some point.
Well, we had something similar with the computer on TOS and TNG, you know, where they would ask the computer or tell the computer a command and it would carry that out. It wasn't as, I hate the word to use, conscious or sentient as Zora perceived to be. But, you know, we do know that they have interactive computers that'll respond to this kind of thing.
Right. I guess what I'm saying, though, is will we see something specifically? Because on Trek, usually it's computer and then they say the command. Is there going to be something introduced that's a very rudimentary, obviously not this advanced because she's had 1,000 years to be, you know, developing, but that's known as Zora. It could even be initials that stand for something else.
We'll see somewhere Z-O-R-A crate or something. Hey, by the way, there was one article that I read that made a little bit of sense too, how Calypso probably solves the Discovery's continuity problem with the rest of the, the season. Or
if she starts out with a voice like this, we're in trouble.
Working. and it kind of makes sense. If Discovery's been lost for, 1,000 years, at some point it does get lost. So it's obviously gone somewhere. The only other ship that was like it, the other ship that had the same technology,
Glenn
is gone.
Right.
So that way, the spore drive and all that just seemingly be lost forever.
Yeah, I was thinking from a continuity standpoint, and Clinton, where, you know, are these standalones that could be, you know, like, oh, okay, it as the series closes out, which I assume it will at some point, that the writers have it in the storyline, the overarching storyline, that's how it will go out, and then we'll find out.
Yeah, that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Right, because you would have to find out why the crew left.
Yep, and never came back.
But also, I mean, one of the things that struck me, because I thought the same thing, but at the same time, I'm thinking, all right, they told Zora or whatever Zora was at that
point. Stay here till we get back.
Right, and so everyone left, but said, stay in this spot until we get back. And the thing that struck me about that was this concept you have in Trek, I think the original series when we had the Defiant phasing in and out is you can't move from this spot.
Oh,
otherwise you're going to affect time.
You think it might be called an interspace? What is it? Interspace or what's the transition space between the universes?
Yeah, and they've already had that interaction with mirror universe and the whole.
So I couldn't. I it could be either of those things, or it could be something else. But specifically, you know, I can't move. I know that that could just be a sad thing that the captain says that, and then is obviously never going to return. Or it could be, no, you specifically cannot move from the spot, because eventually, what is 20 minutes in our time is going to be 1,000 years to you. You cannot move.
That would tie in. That would tie in with, you know, the whole spore drive crossing the mirror universe to the regular universe. I think you're onto something there, Clinton.
Mm-hmm. You won.
I won. I won the internet or something like that.
You won the Speculation of the Week award.
I was looking up various things with the episode because I was fascinated by the imagery and some of the things that were going on. So I found the Betty Boop cartoon that they play the tiny clips from.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's Betty Boop's, it's a short called Snow White. So it's essentially a takeoff on the Snow White story. And Coco the Clown, who we see standing behind Betty Boop there, that's actually Cab Calloway singing the St. James Infirmary Blues. Huh. So, you're trying to read things into, because you have to choose something to be this clip.
Yep.
You could choose anything you want.
But there's a reason the writers picked that.
Right. So why was that specifically chosen? And I think that Funny Face is a bit more clear as to why, you chose Funny Face, because it's this kind of star-crossed lovers story that has a more happy ending in the movie, but Zora kind of incorporates and makes it her own happy-ish ending by now Kraft has replaced Fred Astaire. Mm-hmm. And she's replaced Audrey Hepburn when she plays Funny Face in the 3D environment. So I thought that was interesting as well. I'm sure several people noticed that the disco logo isn't exactly the same on the T-shirt. The eye has got a line on the top and the bottom, and there's no Delta shields on the shoulders. So I don't know whether that's supposed to indicate a passage of time before this event of Stay Here takes place, that it's not like next season-ish or some time down the road, something will change. And that's kind of a little, this isn't exactly where we were, that you thought we were.
I'd like to see the crew come back. And like you said, time passed differently. They come back. Someone's been sleeping in my transporter bay.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, where's that shuttle we bought? We paid a lot of money for that. Well, we don't have money, but you know what I'm talking about. I thought it was interesting that you have echoes of 2001 because you have Kraft playing Zorro in a game of chess and the computer wins the game, which is, exactly what happens in 2001. Ooh,
very observant. Wow. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
How many times did you watch this?
Twice. Once. Okay. Then I was trying to play, I felt this way the first time I watched the episode, but it's clear that these are all humans and something has happened to the Federation that I don't think that Kraft has any idea what the Federation is, even though he is human, because he talks about his enemy being the Vidrash, and they have all these media files from the before time. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, he says, thank you to Zora. You reminded me what it is to be human. So it's kind of like a Planet of the Apes environment where all the knowledge of the before time is essentially gone. Or are the Vidrash actually keeping that alive because they have all this information about the before time? So there's something else going on there in the background as well that we don't know a lot about.
Well, he also didn't know what Tuesday was.
Right. Exactly.
Or
Taco Tuesday.
Or waffles. Waffles. He didn't know what waffles were.
I like how he touched it and then he smelled it. Tried to see what, that was funny.
And I like the fact that when he first shows up and Zorro's asking his name, he says his name is Quarrel. And I felt like, because knowing how they do the naming, that he was like naming himself, because I think he felt like, I'm quarreling with, I don't know who it is.
I thought he was named after the kid on The Walking Dead.
Quarrel. I was about to say the same thing.
That's what I thought he said at first. I'm like, he didn't just say that.
No. My dad was a sheriff.
I got this stupid hat.
There's these zombies running around.
So those are, you know, kind of delving into this, I'm thinking, I think this is a bit more possibly rich in clues about things than it appears on the surface.
Well, I do have, I think they're all going to kind of fit in somehow, little pieces of the puzzle. But I think the other thing I like about these is they have like a Twilight Zone-esque feel to them a little bit.
Yeah. Some people were equating more towards Black Mirror for this episode.
This one, yeah.
Yeah.
Although so, Black Mirror is usually near future. 1,000 years isn't exactly near future of a show that takes place 200 years in the future.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot. So it's really 1,200 years when you think about it. So.
In the life of a computer, does it matter?
It apparently not.
It's a lot of CPU cycles.
And those waffles are still fresh. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Chef's been away for a while, but he left these in the fridge. They should be fine.
Freezer burn echoes. My favorite.
That's right.
So I think we're all giving this one a thumbs up.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And definitely a completely different tone than the first one, which I like the fact that we're getting a lot of variety in here and how these things are playing out. And the next one we're going to get some backstory on Saru, on his home world.
See if he's good with a little, asparagus on the side or. Do you season your kelpian with just salt and pepper, or do you go with steak sauce?
You know, I'm ordering it on the cruise.
Yeah. Hmm.
All right. Well, that's our main mission. So let's do something random and get ourselves back from our main mission.
Stand here and scan things.
Wow.
Anticlimactic.
Yeah, from Zor to that. I don't know how to process that. But it's time for our warp speed roundtable.
Do you want something warpy?
Just listening to it.
No. Note to self, make effect. I think I made that note to myself before and haven't done it, but I will.
We eventually. Need no effects. I have some. I'll plug them in.
Hey, right. Turn that damn music down.
I'm going to give a fucking neck pinch there. All right. So last time around on Warp Speed Roundtable, we asked what crazy name you would give a Starfleet vessel. And several people answered that question. I'd like to mention a few of them here. Amy said the Zelbinion, which is actually the Peacekeeper ship from Farscape.
Oh, very nice.
Glenn said Warp, there it is.
I like that.
Because, you know, when you look up in the sky and it just comes out of warp, it's like, whoa, there it is.
Yep, pretty much. Brian echoed Chuck's thought of Shippy McShip Face.
For the win.
Emphasize the E in there.
Yeah, you always have to enunciate that one very carefully. And listener Diane sent in a whole slew of suggestions, so I thought I would highlight just a few of them. The USS Exxon Valdez.
They crashed into a planet and just went sideways.
Leaked dilithium all over the planet. Everything died.
Nasty. Antimatter. What do you mop that up with? An anti-sponge. I don't know. The USS SSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSS
damaged.
Yeah, my ears too.
Yeah, the USS Pratfall, the USS Sexy Sadie, and the USS Who First, USS What Second, and USS USS I don't know, third.
Very nice.
Oh, no. That's funny.
Yeah, you see what you did there.
Yeah.
Who's on first?
But this week, we're going to say, in honor of Stan Lee, we're asking, which Marvel Cinematic Universe character would you like to see show up in season two of Star Trek Discovery, and why would they be there? And I give the example of, say, the Incredible Hulk shows up, and he is looking for his long-lost tribe, the Orions. So that, yes. That's just an example.
Hulk one girlfriend.
Exactly. So I will throw it to you first, Chuck. Who would you like to see from the Marvel Cinematic Universe show up in the season two of Discovery?
I would really like to see the character from Daredevil, Kingpin, reprise his role as Korob in Cat's Paw.
Interesting. Who would be the female in that then? And Marvel superhero perhaps for that role as well, or?
Oh, you had to get me on that one. I hadn't thought that far ahead in my script writing. I'll have to get back to it. I was thinking more of the cat, but okay.
Okay. Let's go next to Craig. Who would you like to see?
I would like to see Nick Fury come and commandeer the Discovery.
Ooh.
Because he's on a mission to stop Thanos.
Ah, I see.
Or have Thanos just show up on Discovery and commandeer because he's looking for the stone.
Well, what if all those seven signals that we see out in the distance, what if those are all
more like infinity stones?
Stones.
They're all the same color.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Think about that.
Oh,
that'll make your head hurt. Whoa.
I actually just, Maybe Phil Coulson, he can just come and admire everybody.
And he can take them all on a vacation to Tahiti, because it's a magical place.
Right. Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. I say that Black Panther would show up and offer the Federation Vibranium if he judges their mission worthy, so they'd have to prove themselves.
I'm sure Wakanda has more technology than Discovery anyway.
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, please, you're using holograms? How quaint.
How quaint. I can make holograms appear in my hand.
Oh, look, it's a hologram of my hand. No, that's just your hand. No, that's a hologram. That's not my hand.
A little meta.
Well, we're going to put the question out to you people as well. Which Marvel Cinematic Universe character would you like to see show up in season two of Star Trek Discovery, and why would they be there?
Love it.
Doesn't have to make that much sense, but...
No, neither do we.
No, that's not exactly.
Goodness, look at the time.
Oh, Sir Patrick, stop that. Get back where you belong on the other show.
Yeah.
Hey, if you can cross genres between Marvel and Star Trek, I can cross podcasts.
Well, maybe that's Professor Xavier showing up and speaking with Pike. I don't know.
Picard on the Picard series.
Oh, ding for the win.
Oh, my. Oh, this is too confusing.
Professor Xavier called. He wants to squat on the Picard show.
We should have left that one. Hey,
Charles.
Why do I really, really want to know what Crazy Joe thinks right now?
His head's exploding right now, I'm sure. Yeah. Let us know, Crazy Joe. All right, so that's our challenge to you. And so we're going to close up our table. I don't know what we do with a whoopsie round table. Yeah, sure, we'll do that because...
Push some buttons.
Just push some buttons, Chuck. Crossing genres with MST. We've come to the end. It's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, when I'm not doing this show, over at comedyforecast.com. You can find me on Twitter, at Comedy Forecast, Facebook, Comedy Forecast, Instagram, Comedy Forecast. You get the general idea of that type of thing. Chuck and Craig, you still doing that other show of yours?
Yes. If you go over to chuckchat.com, you can find Technorama Podcast and several others that
we're not doing it right now.
Yeah. Actually, it's released today, so yeah, close enough.
Excellent. Excellent. So we encourage you to listen to both of our other shows because that's more for
we're
us.
I don't, for listeners.
We are.
Where
we
the
are.
Insanity continues.
Yeah, let's face it. We're just desperate for listeners.
Not that you're not a great listener. You're an excellent listener.
We're going to be wearing the Topic is Trek shorts on the cruise.
Maybe.
Maybe we will. Gives one pause to think about that. Anyway, it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
By your command.
No, not that.
No, it's wrong genre.
Excelsior!
Or what?